This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, Beats? Welcome back to Rebranded Safety. Today we're talking about AI. We had a chat about AI and tech and safety a long time ago, and you guys loved it. And we bumped into another company at the expo this year, and we were like, these are interesting. We need to talk about AI again. It's a space that's rapidly growing around the world. It's still relatively young, but when it comes to safety, it's practically a newborn. So we definitely need to have more conversation about it, and that's what we're going to do today. Let's jump into the intro, and I'll tell you some more about it.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety. Crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by RiskFluent.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranded Safety. Rebranded Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit subscribe, follow, and all of those button things. My name is James. I am the host, and I'm from the amazing RiskFluent. So today we're going to talk about AI. I find it really funny that in all of like the new safety, future of safety conversations, no matter who's doing it, no one's talking about tech. No one's talking about how is technology going to help us do our job? How are we going to evolve around the technology? How are we going to utilize it? Are we competent to utilize it? I was in a conversation for Project Meletum the other day, and Peter Jenkins said, you know, what the things we need to talk about. And one of the things that came up were IT literacy and kind of data literacy and stuff like that. Like, are we competent to be able to deal with the way the world's going? So when we bumped into a company doing AI stuff in safety at the expo, we were like, yeah, let's have a chat. So we had a bit of a chat at the expo and was like, these guys are interesting. And we thought, come on over to the podcast. Let's get into it. So we've got the CEO of a company that is innovating in this space, and it's in safety as well. So we thought we'd get them and ask as many questions as we could. Let's jump into the conversation and we'll find out some more from Dan Hobbs. Dan, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thanks, Shane. Thanks.
Well, it's been a bit hectic, and so people have probably picked up on the vibe already, like something's happened before you press record.
Whereas, yeah. Into it.
Yeah. How are you, mate? You good?
I'm good. Yeah, we're pretty busy these days, but it's nice having a good team around us, because we can, you know, share the burden or share the fun as we go along. So no, can't complain.
My team are out today looking after our daughter. So selfish of Shelly. Out looking after our daughter, taking her swimming, going out for lunch. Whilst I'm running around having to shove a bagel down my throat for lunch before the next call.
Ridiculous. Yeah, you should have a talk with her or just, you know.
I think we need a performance review if I'm
honest. I was going to say, I was like, did you do your 6 monthly or quarterly reviews yet? How do you do them?
Well, it all went downhill when our accountant says it'd probably be a good idea to make Sherry a director of the company and a 50% owner.
Right.
But now I can't give her too much of a performance review, and I can't really sack her either, because she's equal now, which is horrible. But I do feel like I get performance reviewed quite a lot. So this is, it's flipped on its head here, Dan.
But you know what? I had a really good chat with my dad on this, and he said, you know, it can get lonely at the top, for sure. So it's important that, you know, especially with the founders like yourselves, give each other a pat on the back. Like me, my co-founder, we do co-founder appreciation WhatsApp text to each other, just out of the blue. But it's a good way of just getting recognition, because everybody wants recognition. Everybody, you know, likes to be said, hey, you're doing a great job here. It's an important thing to have.
I really like that. Sherry's going to edit this podcast, so keep that in mind.
All the good bits. It'll just be the 50% thing. We'll
no, to be fair, we do support it, but I quite like that idea. I run another business, like a community for safety professionals, and there's two of us that have founded that. And that's something I might bring up with him actually, and say, he should text me more, is what I want. I don't really give a shit about appreciating him. No, I do.
Have to. It's a two-way street.
Yeah.
For sure. Right, mate, let's get into it. So we're going to talk about essentially AI in safety because of what you guys do. So normally what I would do is say at the end of the podcast, kind of give the company a plug and stuff like that, and we'll still do that. But because we're going to talk about essentially what you guys do, I think it might be worth you kind of talking just quickly, giving us an introduction to kind of what you do, and then it will make sense as to why we're having this conversation with you in a way. Does that make sense?
Perfect. Yeah. So my name is Dan Hobbs, and I'm the CEO of Protex AI. So we use camera software to identify danger before people get hurt. And I guess the reason why we're doing what we're doing, which I'm sure we'll get into, is that safety. And I think when people look from outside of the world of safety, it can look like it's a department or a team, which it is, but it's also behavior and a culture. And because it's a behavior, it's something that there's an outcome to it, to the behavior. So safety until now has been, and to no one's fault their own, quite reactive, where we got to wait to see something before we can, like an injury or whatnot, before we can say, hey, we got to do something about that. So what we do with Protex is we use this camera software and computer vision and AI to identify the behaviors that lead to accidents so that you can stop the behaviors from happening, rather than actually wait for someone to get hurt.
Yeah. And how I came across you and your team and what you guys are doing is we met at the expo, and Elisa, who is probably our biggest fan or a listener, I think she might hate being called a fan, actually. It does feel a bit uncomfortable to say fan. Our most regular listener, to the point where if we don't put something out on a Monday, she sometimes texts me and saying,
"Yeah,
what's going on? Like, where's the podcast?" Mm-hmm. And she came out, and I respect Elisa's opinion on things. I got a lot of time for her. She'll hate me bigging her up on the podcast and paying her a compliment. But she came over and she was like, "Oh, you've got to talk to these guys." So I was like, "Oh, if Elisa's saying that, then I need to either..." This could go either way. Either she loves what you're doing or she hates what you're doing and wants me to have a look and agree that she hates what you're doing. So yeah. I'm expecting to either walk around the corner and go, "Oh my God, what is this?" Or go around the corner and go, "Oh my God, this is amazing." And it was the latter, not the fourth.
Good to hear. That would have set it for a really bad podcast if it was the former, I guess. Yeah.
Or a really entertaining podcast. And then we ended up having a chat about it, and that's kind of what sparked this conversation. And I know there's a few things we're going to try and talk about, but essentially it is about like the place of tech and AI, particularly in the future of safety. And to be frank, I don't think we are safe as a safety professionals and the people maybe that are trying to talk about like better ways, new ways of doing safety, include tech in a conversation anywhere near enough, like at all. And there might be a couple of reasons for that. But where I want to kind of start off maybe on like the big question or issue for me is when I have seen AI and similar types of tech as what you're doing come into the sector, it's normally just another stick to whack the worker with, which was the first conversation we had at the expo. And I was like, "Look, I'll be frank with you guys. This is my concern, that we're going to install what you're doing, not utilize it for what it could be utilized for and the amazing stuff it could do, and just use it for another stick to whack the worker." That's my big concern with AI. So I kind of like put that there because I think we'd definitely come back onto that. But I thought it might be worth maybe starting with like from a perception of yourself. Why did you pick AI and look at safety and go, "Yeah, as a kind of entrepreneur, that's where we're going with this"? Like, you could have gone to sport, you could have gone to any cool sector out there and had an amazing life in such a cool job, and you decided to come to safety to do your AI. So like what was that? What did you see that was missing maybe, or saw that we could benefit from what you guys are doing?
Sure. Yeah. I guess for context, before I even like chat about it or anything like that, in the safety world, I do not have a safety background, nor does anybody in the company have a safety background. just to state that. So I'm not going to come in and say, hey, this is so peach, we've done this way or whatever, which I think is really good. And we're very, very honest about that. Yeah. We're not going to tell people how to, hey, this is how you should do your job or not. But in saying that, one of our partners said it to us. They said, hey, you know, it's a lot easier to think outside of the box when you've never been in it. It's a cool kind of take on it. So that's what I've been leveraging my thought process on from kind of here on in. But why safety? Well, first off, slap yourself on the wrist there, because safety is actually an incredibly fun market. And the reason I say that is because every person we talk to in the space is sound out. You know, there's no asshole culture in safety, which is great. And I think that's something we did. So a bit of background about the company. We're just over a year old. And my co-founder and I known each other since we were like 12 years old, kind of growing up together. He was studying a computer vision PhD, and I just sold the previous company. And we kind of did the reverse. We didn't say, hey, we want to do something in safety. How do we do it? We said, hey, we've got computer vision and artificial intelligence. Where can we apply it, like you said there? And yes, you could look at any market, but one thing we really wanted to do was try to do something that had a purpose, not so much like, hey, we want to make a huge difference in the world. It was just that, did it have a purpose to improving someone's lifestyle or improving how people work? And the reason it came around, you're right, we did look at like where could we put it. We actually started looking at shopping centers first to see if we could see crowd flows, like in Boots, where do you put the shampoos, those type of things. But again, not real big purpose on it, bar making companies more money on that of where to put product placement. And then one day, Kieran's aunt, who worked for Procter & Gamble, she came in one day and she talked, she was quite upset. And she talked about a death that happened on site. Got into it and she said, you know, they thought it was a freak accident, but when they went back through to CCTV, which they did for all the accidents, they noticed that the behaviors that led to that were actually happening day in, day out, week in, week out. And that was our aha moment. It was like, okay, cool. Can we use computer vision and AI to identify these behaviors that lead to them? But a cool thing, which Kieran's PhD was in, is computer vision and privacy. And that's where it comes into moving away from the stick, you know, the stick that beats the worker. That's actually the total opposite of how AI should be approached, but we can chat about that maybe in a sec.
For sure. No, I really like that actually. I think we kind of go there now, because I think that would be probably a big concern for a lot of people that I might bring this on. I think there's a lot of preconceptions around tech and AI that I think we'll get into as well. But if you are talking to a customer, like, is that a concern for a lot of people? Do you get that fed back to you? Like, oh, I don't know, we're taking all this data from people, GDPR and stuff like that. Like, and that privacy piece, that must be a concern for a customer. How do you kind of have that conversation?
Yeah, well, when you pull back AI in general, we use AI in the vision sense, you know, computer vision and stuff like that. But AI in general, it's still a super, super, super early market or technology or market or industry. Yeah. So when you apply it to like different things, and the biggest thing of the pushback, I feel anyway, is not knowing what it's about. Because when you say AI can be anything, and straight away you go to the whole big brother approach, or where they're watching us, you know, their two workers in the warehouse, that's terrible. I don't know the accent for the big brother guy, but that type of thing, which isn't what it should be about. And the reason for that is just because people don't know what it's for.
Yeah.
So how we've built the product in such a way, and which other people are doing as well, is this thing called privacy by design. And what that means is it follows the suit of person de-identification. So the last thing we'll ever want products to be, or in general, like AI should be, is exactly like you said, a finger wagging exercise. You didn't do this right. You know, pull James into the office and say, hey, you need to be doing this way, X, Y, Z. The way you get around that is, and the way what we do it is you manage by the collective. That's why I said at the start, safety is a behavior, right? So I know that for sure. And behaviors aren't a one person or another person. It's usually a collective side of things. So what we do with Protex, and if you think of safety as a timeline, you have your proactive safety, you have your incident happening, so accidents occurring, and then you have a reactive safety approach. How people, when they think of this, happening is, you know, as the accident's happening, a buzzer goes off. We identify, James, you should stop doing this, whatever. And then you have your reactive safety, which is your reporting aspect, which is an incredibly important part of the process. But then this proactive side of things is really where AI can help, where you're not saying, you know, putting people in and saying, don't do this, or being, because that's still reactive, they've still done it. It's identifying the behaviors months and months and months before the incidents have occurred. And that's by managing by the collective. So what we do, and the way we do that, is things like you can blur images. You don't identify, you mentioned earlier GDPR, the thing called is a personal identifiable information, PII. Don't pick up any of that. So it's not a case of doing it by the individual, you're managing by the collective overall, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, yeah. So in a way, the AI, obviously the camera will see it, but then the AI says, no, that's not relevant to me because the algorithm, whatever, tells me I'm not allowed to look at that. Is it anonymous then, or yeah?
Yeah, so, right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Because it is, because you do, like, when you say AI in general, you go back to, you know, the Star Wars, Star Trek kind of thing of it's like something living in a box, like a living, breathing thing that's looking at it. But it's not. It's just a technology that can be applied for the better.
That's awesome. So. Oh, I like that. Actually, so I love that you kind of, and obviously that, like you say, that's bred into your co-founder's kind of PhD as well. So it was always a thing. But I like how that I like just the word privacy by design. I really like that. And you kind of eliminated that even if. Like every tool that we can make can be used for good or bad, right? Like the internet's an amazing thing, but like we also do some pretty nefarious shit on there. Mm-hmm. So like you've kind of essentially tried to design people out of being able to use your tech as a finger wagging kind of exercise.
Correct. Yeah. It's a tool, right? It's not going to say, hey, this person did bad. It's a case of saying, these are the trends. So your facility, I think near misses are a great one, right? You know, the Heinrich triangle or Bird's triangle, stuff like that. Now, obviously there's people that are, you know, debating over the validity of that. But in essence, it says, you know, for every fatality that happens, there's about 29, 30 minor injuries that will happen before that. And these like 3,000 unsafe acts and near misses that happen before that. How safety works now is it can work very effectively on the top half of that pyramid where someone gets injured, we can do something about it. But safety at the end of the day is a data game. It's about how much data we have to make a decision. Yeah. And if that's based off reporting, that's a very small subset of what's actually happening in a facility at any point in time. Whereas if you can identify those 3,300 things early, you can stop it getting to the top of the pyramid. Yep. But like I said, near misses. If you think of near misses now, if you said, hey, you shouldn't do that. I always compare it to coaching a soccer team. So if you tell a player, they put a cross into the box and you say, what did you do? That was a terrible idea. They're never going to try it again.
Yeah.
You know, they're never going to do it again. So that you don't want to bring that fear aspect into it with using AI either. So near misses are an interesting one. Because if you think of near misses, if they're not picked up and not identified, they keep happening and happening until they're not a miss anymore. And that's where things get dangerous. And that's not from one person or one worker, whatever it may be, that's a collective side of things within a company. And they're the type of things you can spot using AI from a person de-identification approach.
Yeah. I love this. I also love that you touched on Heinrich Triangle and the argument about the validity of it, which I think is really interesting. Because the only person I trust in that conversation is a gentleman called Carsten Busch, who's done the most amount of research into Heinrich than anyone else. No one has done any more research into him and into Heinrich other than him. And his intention was to try and find out what Heinrich was trying to communicate, because how we've used the triangle, it doesn't make sense, right? How can 100 slips tell us that we're going to have a chemical explosion? It doesn't make any sense. So to that point, that's why people are having a debate about its validity, right? So Carsten kind of gone back and said, has kind of gone back and tried to find out what Heimrich was trying to say. And ultimately what Heimrich was trying to say was for it, the model, the triangle and the numbers is really just an illustration for people who are not, they wouldn't have been called safety professionals back when Heimrich kind of did his work, but they're not like people who understand it like he does. They were more for like the operational people. His target audience was like business owners and operational people. So he made these drawings to simplify it, to help them buy into it. And actually all of the writing around it, all of the context for you to actually take it forward, we don't talk about. And actually he was really pretty clear that what it means is for each risk type. So if you're having 1,000 near misses in quotes for fire related stuff, that could be a signal that you've got a big problem that could cause a fatality or a big fire, or you're having loads of slips on chemicals. It means you might have a chemical related problem, which means that might be a signal that something deeper is going on in the system. So
yeah,
that for me, that it makes a lot of sense when we talk about it like that. And ultimately that comes back into what I really love about what you guys are doing and the notion and the tone and the vision of what you're trying to do, is to just make data-based decisions, better informed decisions, which essentially is what Heimrich was trying to say. Collect loads of data at the bottom of the triangle, because that'll tell you what might be going on further up the triangle. And essentially that for me is where I think tech plays a massive, massive role, because we're shite at that, gathering data and making better decisions. We're pretty crappy humans. So for me, that's got to be like just a natural place for data and particularly AI to come up and go, here's a question, I suppose, actually, Dan, like, the AI collects all that data, whether it's now or in the next evolution, can the AI make those predictions to say you might have a problem with workplace transport, for example, or something like this?
Yeah, the way we look at it, and that's the biggest thing, I think, I don't think you can ever take people out of the equation for especially for safety. You know, as much as we're not great at making decisions as humans, we still have to make the decisions at the end of the day, because you can't base everything off it. You can give recommendations, all right, but you hit the nail on the head there. It's moving, and Lisa actually was saying this as well, it's moving from, you know, data-driven decisions to data-informed decisions, and just opening up that thing. So at the end of the day, what we do and what AI can be used for is a visibility tool. And not just visibility of what's going on, but visibility about what the unknown unknowns. We always say that to our clients. It's like, yes, you know, near misses are a problem, or yes, you know that people, you know, lifting boxes incorrectly or lifting stock incorrectly is a problem. What are the things you're not too sure on?
Yeah.
That you don't have data on? And that's really where AI can come into the fold. People will always be needed in safety. There's no doubt about that. But it's how you complement the existing health and safety stack that you're using. That's the important bit. It's working alongside it. Yeah. Not a case of being, you know, replaced. I think that's the fear as well. Like, it's that, oh, AI is replacing my job and stuff like that. But if you've ever watched, really good one, if you've ever watched Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the new one, not the old one, the weird Tim Burton one, where Charlie's dad's replaced by a toothpaste lid or toothpaste top machine that puts the caps on toothpaste, and then he ends up being working alongside it at the end of the movie. Incredibly random analogy, but it's exactly that. It's robotics, AI, all that type of stuff isn't here to replace what people do. It's to make it better and make jobs easier and more fulfilling when we get to it at the end of the day.
No, I like that. Is it? Will it evolve into a position where it might be able to tell us that we're focusing on the wrong place? That it might be able to just give us a prompt, like a nudge at the board or the safety professional to say, look, I've been telling you for months, like, but now you're really not listening. You have got a problem here. Mm-hmm. Like, your next big incident might be, statistically speaking, might be here.
It can do that now. It can do that now because it's a data play, right? It's a case saying, well, you've got Like one of our clients, named the clients specifically, but they had a case where they put in Protex to identify the unknown unknowns, and they built the rules around it and said, we're not too sure about this, but this is what could be happening. They had a bunch of data of the events that came up. They then went and retrained staff based off the data that they had. And they, because if you have, for example, you know, 50 near misses, you're going to say, okay, that's an issue in comparison to maybe 20 last week. So that in itself would tell you that there's an issue around that.
Yeah,
you know, you don't need the big flag on it. You can read a bar chart fairly handy on what's coming up or not. But then they did a retraining and they increased compliance by 43% within a month. But that was just purely because it wasn't because we had told them what to do or anything. It was purely because they had the data to make that decision.
Yeah, I wondered that. Like for me, I really like the concept of like a lot of, if I think from like a fire perspective, a lot of problems that we have with big catastrophic fires is more often than not, and that's the same with many other big disasters. But like if I suggest use where I'm probably most experienced in fire, in that we've got a housekeeping problem, we've got a construction design problem, and then we've got a people problem, and then we've also got ignition source problem. And often we very much look at them very in their own lanes. So we're like housekeeping, oh, just got to keep it tidy. It's not very nice to have a dirty workplace. We struggle sometimes, I find, to put the connections into things that are, they're really obvious ones, but like sometimes they're much more subtle than that, in that if we're trying to take, say, like the Bradford football stadium fire, where we solve the problem of the people buying one ticket, going opening the fire exits to let all of their mates in so that they didn't have to buy a ticket, we solve that problem by chaining the fire exits. Now, with the power of hindsight, we can all sit here now in 2022 and go, what a stupid decision. But at the time, it made sense to them because they were trying to solve that one problem and not realizing the subtle connections between everything else. If there was a fire, they would all go to these fire exits and ultimately, not be able to escape. For me, I think like AI excites me if we use it correctly on, I don't know, like my lack of my naivety around it is that it gets more and more intelligent as it, the more and more it does. Can it get to a point where it's so intelligent that it starts putting those real subtle stuff that we can't see together and go in, actually, I think we've got a fire problem. Like, what fire problem? Our fire assessor didn't pick that up. Do you know what I mean? Because it's essentially more intelligent of us when it comes to like the real subtle stuff. I don't know. Is it ability to evolve to that point?
Or is interesting take on it. I guess the same way as us not being in the safety realm, but being really good at computer vision and AI and thinking outside the box.
Mm.
Vice versa, you know, and we've had lots and lots of, you know, clients doing the flip side of them knowing it and then pushing the AI. So saying, hey, we don't know AI, but we know lots about safety. How can you create, you know, the perfect blend between them? There's no reason why not, you know, and that's the cool thing about where we're going. Like I said at the start, AI in general is really, really early. And it's about using it to identify these exact things. So that the chained fire exits, for example, a couple of things it could have picked up on that was, okay, well, how many people tried to approach it or tried to open it and then left? It's really being there when you can't. But again, it goes, I think it always will send back to what data it's bringing in, and then using that data. Yeah, you're right. The next step would be to, the system would then use that data to say, okay, well, maybe you need to be looking at this. But I don't think it's a million miles off either, which is the cool thing about it. Yeah. And how we use it. I think tech adoption, when you look at like the health and safety market and the industry of how that's evolved over the last 100 years, you can kind of see how tech's definitely creeping in, because you have, you know, originally started with 10 days since the last accident, signs on the doors, which is still used today, to, you know, companies like Eco Online or, you know, Safety Culture or any of these companies coming in and digitizing that process. Mm-hmm. So taking it from a reporting aspect or those type of things and now bringing it online. So you do your onboarding online instead of doing it, you know, another way. And then you have your reporting where people can do those reports. And that's an evolution, a technical evolution. Now there's this new evolution now of bringing in AI into the fold in order to improve that data pool even further. So the next step is to see if AI can help even more on that front.
Yeah. I love it because we're so like we've kind of touched a few times, like if we're using it to fill the weaknesses in being human and to complement the good things of being human. Like I think about literally doing a fire assessment yesterday, real simple little error, so easy done. They've got obviously had a mad rush of like old pallets or whatever. So they've got like this massive buildup of like old pallets and the bins and stuff. And if you go inside the building, you end up going through a fire escape into this external route at the back of the factory, which is very often forgotten because whoever goes at the back of the factory. And that ended up walking straight into a pile of pallets because I'm doing my job. My job is to move the pallets and put them outside the factory because they're waste and the bin man's coming in a couple of days. So we'll give it to the bin company. But if, you know, I might have just a simple tool of having that camera there that picks up, hang on a minute, that there is a means of escape. And then that pings up on somebody's computer to say, you know, you need to move that. It's just a simple thing that it fills the hole of human fallibility. And I think if we use it like that to help us instead of using it being like, Dan just blocked the fire exit, so tell Dan off. Dan, you're an idiot. That's a fire exit. But if we just went, okay, cool, we've just done that and we'll fix it or whatever. And then it happens again. Then it happens again. Okay, now we've got a problem and people keep putting stuff there. Let's do it. But like immediately we can fix that problem because the AI spotted it and let us know.
We can actually do that now. That's one of our features, funny enough. So it's exit block detection, which is what we do. So it's really cool how that's done. It basically takes like an image of what it should look like when there's nothing there, and then it takes an image of when there's something there and it compares the two of them and says, hey, there's a pallet left there or something like that. And you can, the way we built our product is you can actually dictate the outputs. So you can say, hey, I want this put to my event logs. You can log in and look at it. You can have different integrations, but you can have like a text message as well. So if the health and safety manager has like their phone on them, send them a text and say, hey, just let you know, exit blocks, there's a blockage on the exit and they can go clear it.
What I really like about that, Dan, is that then becomes a nudge. So if it's a point where I'm getting a text every 10 minutes because this one particular exit keeps getting blocked, right? And my phone's going fucking nuts, I'm going to get so pissed off with it. I'm going to be like, we've got a problem. So it nudges us to like fix a problem instead of just keep going to Dan in the dispatch area. It keeps putting the forklift right next to the truck. Instead of me just going, stop being an idiot, because Dan's gone on holiday and now Steve is doing it and Steve's doing the same thing. It might nudge us to make a better decision to go, we're not fixing this problem by just telling the person off. So there's a problem. Oh yeah. Well, to be fair, that area is really cramped. So it becomes a bit of a nudge for me, which is something I think we struggle with in safety, is nudging people at the right time in the right place to make better decisions. Because ultimately, like, marketing do such a better job of it because tech so easily slots into stuff like that, whereas it's harder to slot into safety. So when I look at this, I'm like, we can use this not only to make better decisions, but also to nudge people at the right time to make better decisions.
Yeah, and that goes back to managing by the collective. You know, it's not a case, like, that's just one example, but like those near misses that I spoke about there, you know, it's how you digest that data. You know, like, is it there and then you need to know? Probably not for near misses. You kind of need to know from a collective, because if you're looking at me like, oh shit, I gotta go down, you know, finger wag, come back up, that's not what you want to be doing. It's about, okay, well, how many did we have this week? And then you start opening up these questions and you know, saying, well, we had like 10 on a Thursday morning. Why the hell is that? And that's where I meant about complementing safety professionals. It's not a case of, oh, the AI will decide. That's what I meant. Yes, you know, it can suggest stuff, but at the end of the day, especially like from our perspective, we don't know facilities half as much, a tenth as much as our customers or clients will ever know it. They're going to know it a million times more. Mm-hmm. What we do is we provide the data to understand what's happening, but the decision of how to apply that data is purely down to the local people for it. And that's what I meant about complementing health and safety staff, not replacing it.
Which brings us on to a really interesting discussion then. Is the safety profession competent enough to, are they IT literate enough? Are they data literate enough to use your tech in the way that it needs to be used, essentially? Like, none of us are data analysts. None of us are trained in real IT in any way, shape or form, some better than others. Let's have a discussion. Like, is that an area where our competency needs to up its game?
That's a really, really good question on it. And I think the way we look at it, I think any company coming into any organization, if you have any analytics around it, the onus of that isn't on the user being the safety professional. That onus of making it digestible is solely on the company to do that. If the company gives you this, you know, Excel sheets and whatever, and you're like, what the fuck? And I got to do a whole change management and training around it. That's not a good company or not a good piece of technology. Good technology and good AI, good analytics should be, anybody can come in. You know, your granny could come in and say, geez, I know exactly what's going on in this facility, which is, I don't know if you want to talk to your granny about that. Probably more important things at hand. But it's exactly that, you know, if it's good technology and it's good analytics, you should be able to walk in and scroll through it the same way you go scroll through an Instagram feed or scroll through your Facebook, whatever. That's how easy it has to be.
Do you not run the risk of like oversimplifying it by doing that?
No, I don't think so. It's not making it, you know, I don't think there's such thing as oversimplifying it, because if it's at the end of the day for us, and for any technology to come into it, usage has to be really, really high. Because if in the first 30 days you're not using the tech, then it's not really applicable. Like, yes, when you look at AI and stuff, it's a really sexy thing when you bring into it and it's exciting. But if it can't mold into and complement how you're doing your job now and you have to change loads, you're just not going to use it. Yeah. You know? A really, really good kind of example, a totally different industry now, but there is a yogurt company, I think they're UK based, and they tried to tackle the Chinese market. They did a load of market research on it, entered the market, had all the taste tests, and they loved it. And then when they put it into the shops, no one bought it. And everybody was like, well, what the hell? We did all the tests and whatnot. And they found that at the time, and still to kind of now that the Chinese don't use spoons and don't have the accessibility of spoons as much as you know we do in the UK and Ireland. So when they went into it, they didn't have a good ability. So that's the thing, it didn't mold into how they lived their lives. So then they ended up putting a plastic spoon in the lid like you have in those ice creams, and it did great after that. But it was suddenly so simple where it wasn't able to mold into how people live their lives on a day-to-day basis. And because of that, nobody used it. Same way with analytics. It's the exact same thing. If you can mold into how people do it, whether it be a daily digest email and you have four or five things, what are the things you really need to understand in those? That's how it molds into it. But if it's not there, and that's mean the onus on the company to ensure that, and they have the duty to do that. And if they don't, then it's not applicable to what you should be using it for.
Yeah, no, I really like that. I think that's somewhere where a lot of the time when a company has gone out to procure a piece of software, typically in the past, in my experience, which would be like a CRM system or something like that, like the lack of conversation with the shop floor is shocking. And then we give it to the shop floor and we say, use it. And it doesn't work. It doesn't fit them. It's not people centered in any way, shape or form. And then we just moan at them because we've wasted millions of pounds installing, I don't know, X CRM for, and it's their fault. And we're like, well, we never asked them to try it. We never asked them to tell us if it works for them. So yeah, I really like that you've kind of, it's just making it people-centered really, isn't it? Like user experience is something that we talk about a lot in sales, marketing, and I suppose in tech as well.
In any tech, like even when you pick up your phone, you know, how you integrate or interact with your apps on a phone has to be self-intuitive, you know, even just a slide thing. I've actually met the guy, used to work for Instagram, who invented the infinite scroll. Do when you just keep scrolling and going. And it was funny, actually, just to digress a bit, how he did that. They focused on, do you know the slot machine where you pull a slot machine and the thing spin and you wait and wait and wait, and then it happens, you get that little hit of dopamine. That's why you have a little spinning emblem on when you're loading pages. It's for that reason, because it's like that slot machine replicated into social media. But on those type of things, you should just, when you log into it, you don't need any training, right? You don't need to, like, say, take a course in Instagram. And if you do, Jesus, you need to be doing something else or anything like that. You should just be able to use it. And technology in general, especially in the safety realm, it's no exception. It should be a case where you just come in and you're able to use the platform.
Yeah. Well, again, that's another nudge, isn't it? Simplification is a nudge. Like, if we can simplify something, so it doesn't need to be this real complex conversation for us to make a better decision, or the decision that we want them to make, then we're just nudging them in the right direction. I love that.
Yeah, so that's why we use video in Protext, because it's a universal language, and everybody, you know, you watch a video, you know what's going on, and it's easy to digest. So that's why we've moved into the computer vision space.
Yeah. So, like, what kind of I mean, we've kind of touched on it, but it might be really interesting to really get into it and really kind of make it blindingly obvious. Like, what kind of problems are safety professionals trying to navigate that you would be like, that's us, like, that's our perfect problem that we can solve? Like, yeah, like, what would you say would be like, yes, that is the perfect problem that we can help you with?
Yeah, again, pulling it back a little bit from that, using vision, you can do a whole heap of things. So if you think of sensors, you know, the wearables and stuff people use, that's gotten quite popular in the last five, six years. And they're great, don't get me wrong, but they're very specific, or task specific. So, like, manual handling, how you lift a box or anything like that is very specific. And you have a specific sensor for that, or a heat sensor for fires, stuff like that. With vision, because you're looking at a video, you can do a whole bunch of things. You don't need one specific use case for it. So we do things like I mentioned, near misses a few times, manual handling errors, so how people lift boxes. We got things like no-go zones, inclusion zones, walkway detection, speed detection. You know, are forklifts hitting corners too quickly? Are they driving straight through junctions? Picking up all those type of things. So there's no specific one use case for it. Using vision in your same way, you know, you'd use it where, like, the Premier League is really well for offside traps and stuff like that, for it's a goal, you know, that type of stuff. That's just using clips for it. So there's no specific one use case for it.
Yeah. What I really like this, because I like to throw a spanner in the works of how we practice in safety, is there is this not a lot of chatter, right? About, like, you know, when you go on site, what's the probably one of the first things that you will don when you go on a construction site?
When us ourselves or in general?
If you go in any construction site, you're just going to see a mate, or you're going to see a customer. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You're going on a construction site. One of the first things that you will always put on.
Oh, your PPE. Yeah.
Which one? Pick one of them.
Oh, I would have said,
go on,
a hard hat, but I know that it's probably going to be high vis or something.
Yeah, high vis. So I'm thinking he's going to say hard hat or stupid. High vis is like the like cornerstone of safety, and like painfully it is. But workplace transport interactions with humans just still kills a shitload of people every year. Yet we wear high vis as a automatic reaction, like putting on pants and shorts and shirt in the morning, we pretty much put on a high vis. And there's part of me that's going, it's not working. It's not working. So when I think about, like, if I go back to, like, when I was in distribution and manufacturing, we had massive warehouses and loads of trucks whizzing around all over the place. And it was like high vis. Like, you cannot go past this point without a high vis. And, you know, you're not wearing a high vis, you're not wearing a high vis, blah, 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 blah. And if we then go back to my original concern of how we're using AI is to just slap people around the wrist and say, you're not wearing a high vis. we would be ignoring the data that's telling us something isn't working. Like something's not working here because we're still getting loads of people hit by trucks. So for me, it's just like the problem is we're not having an impact in what we're doing. We're still having incidents. So the problem is we're not got enough data because we don't know where the real problem is. And for me, having that big eye in the sky, essentially, you know, that can look at it and go, pick up all of this data. It's just the problem is not having enough information to make better decisions for me.
And that's
an example of where it excites me.
That's a really, really good one. So I spoke there earlier about like the unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at it from the outset, you're like, well, everybody's wearing their high vis, but why are we still getting accidents? So that's an unknown, or that's a known unknown, because we know that we know something we don't know. It's totally paradoxical, right? But it's really true, and that goes down to data again. Of do we have the correct data to make decisions? Because on the data pool you're going on there is, well, we know everybody's wearing their high vis. So where is the issue? Because they're all wearing it now. Probably it comes into this whole space of actually, I had an idea of a new company where you could make a high vis that would change color every 5 minutes or something. Because high vis, maybe a hypothesis there is like the reason high vis people are still getting hit is because it becomes background noise, and because everyone's wearing one, it doesn't stand out anymore. So if you can have one that changes color every like 5 minutes or something like that, then that will kind of solve that problem. Maybe we'll keep that between us and your bunch of listeners. Everybody gets a 1% cut of this if they're listening.
Crowd fund.
But that kind of stuff. So it's the unknown knowns, and that stems back to exactly like you said. Do we have the correct data and the informed data to make that decision?
Yeah. There is actually a bit like, so there's a really good podcast in safety called the Safety of Work podcast. And those two guys basically take a question and then they're both kind of academics. So they both just dive deep into academia to try and find an answer for that question. So one of the questions that they've answered is, do high vis work? Do they make us more visible? So they went, right, do high vis make us more visible in visibly complex environments? So to your point, if everyone's wearing one, there's loads moving around, there's loads going on. So construction, manufacturing, distribution would all fall into that kind of category. Do they make us more visible? And pretty much the answer is no. Like the answer is straight up no. And the amount of people I've said this to, and again, this is one of the things I've been, you know, go on about in the podcast. So everyone's probably rolling their eyes, but it is. It's just like the evidence is not there to say that this works. So why do we do it? So look, if it's for commercial, let's just put our hands up and say, look, it's just the uniform now. That's it. Well, if we like that or not, it's the uniform. Okay, cool. That's fine. Let's just put that to one side. At least we can stop telling everyone it's safety and we just say it's not safety, it's the uniform. And we can naturally now, once we've got over that hurdle, is actually start trying to make better decisions to actually have impact on that risk. Because it doesn't. I mean, the only research they found was that actually you'd be better off wearing cuffs, high visibility cuffs, and just waving, because our eyes are apparently biologically evolved to pick up movement more than anything else. So it pick up movement. And I just find it so ironic that we do the opposite. You know, the amount of sites I've been on that they say, right, if you come across a piece of plant, make sure you got high vis on and just stand there and wait for the driver to acknowledge you. And then once they wave you through, you can go, right. So the biological research says don't stand still and do loads of movement. And we say stand still. And it's so ironic. That's where this tech and AI, for me, that's where it really excites me, is to make better decisions by just getting more information to help us make better decisions.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to look at it. And it'll always stem back to that. And it goes back to that original question we were asking of, you know, is it complementary or substitution?
Yeah.
And it's 100% that complement to it. It's just to make decisions. And again, going back to the original bit is why do you get like that squeaky bum time when you hear AI, you know? Yeah. And it makes people uncomfortable sometimes. Yeah. But that's the way it's heading. And it goes back to, oh, what can I do? Is it there to totally disrupt it, or is it there to actually help us with our jobs? And it's most definitely the latter, in my opinion anyway. Of course, people are going to have their own case on it.
So what does it actually look like, Protex AI? Like, if I buy it for one of my customers now, we're like, yeah, we're going with this. What's that going to look like? Loads of cameras and a computer? Or what does that look like?
Sure, yeah. So I'll try to explain it on a vision company, just through words. Didn't think about that one. So what we aren't is a camera company. We don't supply cameras. We don't have that. We link with existing CCTV. So you don't add more cameras to your facility unless you want to, or that's in the plans. And how it works is, and that's the whole thing about existing in a company's health and safety stack that's there now. So we have a heap of integrations, both from logging in right through to how they use the platform, and we don't give the prescribed process safety, and that goes back to us not knowing or not having a background in safety. We have to make it flexible, and you mentioned a people-driven approach or a customer-driven approach to your product, which is what we do. So we actually allow our customers to dictate what they want to identify in their facility. So we have this system that allows them to do that, to ask, and that's how AI should be used overall, is your ability to ask the questions, and then for the system to give you the data to answer those questions rather than answering the questions.
Okay.
That's how we build products. So you go in, you build your rules, say, hey, we need to check out XYZ. We have an hypothesis around this, or an idea around this, and then products can then tell you if it is, or give you the data really to tell you if it is a problem or not.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So would you guys help them in the conversation? I suppose it would be naturally highlight itself if they haven't got cameras in the right place to look at the problem they want to look at. So, and so then it would just be like, you probably need to get another camera there, but to you, that doesn't make a difference. So your system looks at the existing image and just learns from that image. Wow, that's fascinating. I thought it would be like some fancy new camera or something that you guys are putting in.
No, it's just based off the current infrastructure that's there. Like you're not dealing with the camera itself. It's not like the lens that does it. It's the software.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. I completely thought it would be like the camera, but now it makes sense, because there wasn't loads of fancy cameras at your expo stand. If it was the camera, I'm sure you'd have loads of them. So yeah, that's a good point.
It's a funny one. And then on the flip side as well, I think, like, although AI can do lots of different things, it's still limited. So we get like clients come to us and saying, God, this is so cool. And then, which I always have to get involved with, is people can get not carried away, but certainly get adventurous to what they can do with AI. So they're like, oh, it must be very easy to do this, this. I swear to God, we had a client say, can you identify if someone's picking their nose or something? Or we had another one. You mentioned the acknowledgement thing. So they said, could we identify if a driver acknowledged someone? So had looked at them. This was a camera that's 50 yards away, had looked at them and acknowledged that they're there, and then let them cross the road or something, which is almost impossible to do that through a camera. If you can't see it, Protex can't see it. But it's on the flip side of that as well.
Why did they want to know if someone was picking?
I don't know. It must have been a hygiene thing or something. You know what the funny thing is? I just think it's hilarious that's an actual issue for them. That I always say, you know, what's your biggest issue that you're dealing with? And nose picking apparently was one of theirs. So who knew it was such an issue?
Just let people pick their fucking nose. Like, if they want to pick their nose, just let them pick their nose. Like,
you know, and hay fever season's real strong this year, guys. So yeah. I think it should be a rise really at this stage.
Wow. Well, that is fascinating. how do you, if you get like a tone or a feel from a customer that you're like, you're using our stuff as like a bit of finger wagging, do you guys approach that? Or that must be quite hard, like, for you, like, because I imagine as a company, like, it's really hard for me if I've got a company that I'm working with that is like, you're not getting this, you're taking this completely the wrong way, you know, but do I want to walk away from money? Or that's really hard. Like, have you had that situation? if you're comfortable to talk about it. Obviously, if you're not, then we'll just cut
this. Oh, yeah, of course. No, absolutely. So I think to look at it from another perspective, the companies that we've seen get the most value out of it are the ones that don't do that, are the ones that look at it from a collective approach and stepping, taking the time to reflect on, rather than just seeing it as like, hey, and that's what I mentioned about that, you know, that timeline of safety, you know, we're not dealing with accidents as they happen. And the people that look at it like that, of trying to stop things as they happen, I guess will always use the tool inefficiently or ineffectively, because they're going to try to stop, you know, it's, they're not looking at it from a trend side of things, which is what behavior is. Mm. The users that use it the best, like a shout out to Alice at Market Spencer. She's fantastic, one of our favorite users of it. She'll sit back and say, well, what are we trying to figure out here? And then herself and James work together to figure that out and build your rule around it and then use it effectively like that. So I wouldn't say companies are using, I don't think any of them actually, of our customers, are using it for that, because they're always the forward-thinking companies of how can we use technology for the better, rather than how we use technology to fear-monger around the facility.
There's just so much potential. As you were kind of talking right there, and you mentioned Marks and Sparks, and I was thinking, oh yeah, you can even monitor, like, you know, the trends of customers and where they're going all the time and the routes that they're going in. So you could think about it from a fire safety point of view, means of escape point of view, and it's just loads of information to be able to learn from. And then it made me think about, like, all of the stuff that we're seeing on the news at the moment about events, like what's the one that's been on at the moment, like, and there's a hashtag for it, don't die at this festival, I can't remember. Like, I suppose temporary cameras are a bit costly for smaller festivals, but for the big ones, I imagine they've got loads of temporary cameras up. But like, if I'm a consultant working for Glastonbury, hashtag Glastonbury, if you do need a consultant, we would love to. you know, but like, if I'm looking at that, I'd not be able to just get an AI scanning the whole place for me and going, you've got a bottleneck here of that you're about to shove a million people through. Because I was just thinking of a TikTok I saw the other day of this person watching a crowd of people. There must have been thousands of people trying to cram through a tiny door. And it was just like, someone is going to get crushed, like 100%. And just the ability of an AI to see all of these things, because the security people on the shop floor, like, we can focus in on them and then we can blame them, but they're in a moment doing a job that's completely, like, overwhelming sensory wise. If we had an AI that's kind of unbiased, you know, it doesn't have those human fallibilities, it can just look at it and then let me know, like, to your point, like, drop me a text and say, you might have a pop problem here.
And that's a great way to look at it, because, and it's kind of what we companies like ourselves do. It's being there when you're not.
Yeah.
You know, we actually have this company on Dublin Port, he's this guy called Mark, and Mark is like, we basically put Mark in a product form. So Mark is an operations manager on the board, and we did a sidewalk with him. And as we're talking to him, he's constantly like looking over our shoulder, constantly just keeping his eyes around. And he can't do it all the time, but he's amazing at it. But he's like 20 years experience doing it, you know. So we were like, okay, what if we had Mark everywhere at a time? And that's really what Protex does, which is the cool thing about it. But that's exactly it. It's identifying these things when you're not there. On the crowd one, another cool kind of aspect similar to that is one thing we have an idea for. We haven't found the right company to do it with yet, but you know, the like on the tube or in train stations of not crossing the yellow line, you know, how often do people actually do that? Is that effective? Are people not walking across it? But it's similar to the festival thing, is like, are people approaching it early? So even think about before the crush is going to happen, like you said, hey, a crush is going to happen, send a text. What if you could go before that, like hours and hours or days and days before that? We saw one person being in an area they're not supposed to be in, and then there was 10, and now there's 20. So that's a whole thing of identifying it early so that you can get involved there and then, rather than waiting until the crush happens.
And even if you were to do a simple reaction model to, like, if we would take the underground London underground example, the simple thing is the AI seeing somebody on or over the line, which then activates the speakers in the tube to go and please make sure you don't step over the line at the right time, at the moment that you step over that. That's such a perfect example of tech utilizing a nudge at the right moment, a prompt to say, don't step over the line. We only do it when a train is coming in. Like we say it once and that's it. But what if we said it every single time? So when it's busy, it's just going like mad and everyone gets so pissed off of it that they'll end up not going over the yellow line I think what you'll end up getting there is kind of like the crowd would manage it themselves. Like if you can imagine, you're all sitting there and you've been living in London for like 20 years. You're so fed up of this thing going, you know, don't step over the line. The second a tourist comes and goes to step over the crowd would be like, whoa. And I can see it now that's how that would work so well, I think.
Yeah. So, and even what if you could go even before that? What if you could say, okay, well, rather than doing it as a person stepping on it, what if you could say, well, X amount of people do it on a Thursday morning at 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
And we know that. We know that even before they've done it.
Yeah.
So we know that every morning at 8 o'clock or at 7:58 to put that thing on. And that's again like going the proactive reactive. Proactive is identifying the trend. Yeah. And then knowing months in advance of knowing exactly when you're going to do it, or even noticing it at 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning. Now we need to know when to staff. Then that's when we need to do our sidewalk at that time, because we know that that's an issue then, rather than someone's walked across and then did a buzzer.
Yeah, mate, I love that. There's so much you could go with this, isn't there? Like,
it's getting ahead of the curve. It's getting ahead of the curve with safety, and now the tools are there to do it. Not just like what we're doing. Like we've got an awesome partner called Strongarm in the States who use sensors for that. We've got, you know, so many cool safety companies coming out in the space that are just on the cusp of it. Like it's a super early, we're at this new wave of safety revolution. Whereas, you know, beforehand would have been likes of Eco Online and Evotix and or Evo, whatever it's called there. All those type of companies that changed the game when they came in. Now it's this new step. And even the safety professionals now, they're getting a lot more tech savvy. You know, there's a whole new wave of people coming into the industry who are trained, not only trained like in university, but also trained on how to use technology. So yeah. Why not? Why can't we utilize that in order to improve the safety across the board?
Yeah. Love this. I just like, I'm talking about nudge loads because I'm like really gone into like nudge over the last couple of months and really trying to like reading loads about it and seeing how sales and marketing and I've used it so well. And again, there's a great example of like subtle influence or nudge or whatever you wanted to call it, like choice architecture is another phrase for it, all of that stuff. And there's a great London Underground example actually, where they had picked up that Waterloo to London Bridge was like the busiest part of the London Underground at, you know, like business times, like 8:30 to 9 kind of time. But the walk was only like a 15, 20 minutes. I'm nicking this, by the way, from the World of Work podcast. So if anybody wants to find out, the first person that I'd heard say about it was Jane on the World of Work podcast. And she was, Jane's from London, and she was kind of explaining like it's a complex walk, but it's a reasonably short walk. It's only like 20 minutes, but it's really windy and you would easily get lost. So London Underground put signs up and leaflets and stuff with maps to say, so they basically what they've done is reduce ambiguity. Is they've reduced that ambiguity and said, you know, here's how you do it. So they've reduced the complexity in a way and said, off you go. And they've reduced the congestion. So for me, it's like, again, it's how did they pick that up? How long did it take? Did it take an incident to happen there before they spotted that? Typically, that's what happens is something goes wrong and then we go, well, maybe we'll deal with this. And for me, where this, like to your point, and we've kind of going over our ground now, but that thing of being able to just, that computer to be able to tell me, oh, look, here's a problem. And then I can use my thinking outside the box, safety professional nouse of, okay, let's come up with a solution here. But it's knowing where to look. To your point, or Mark or whatever his name was, like I can relate to that. Like wherever I go, I'm like, all the time, can't relax because you're trained to do it. Like, you know, as an operational person or as a safety person, you are trained to just constantly look around everywhere. So it might just mean that less safety professionals are exhausted because the AI is kind of doing it for them and they can go, oh my God, I can have a rest now.
Oh yeah, that's what I always say. It's like, especially when you're not there, you can chill out. Or we got some clients who are on multiple sites, so they got to drive around to each site just to do a site walk or an audit. And we're like, well, you could just use the system like Protect and just have it in there, and you could just log in your dressing gown in the morning, and just be like, hey, I wonder what's happening in here, and set up your rules accordingly for it. But I think that's a really good take on it, and that's one I guess I never really thought of, like, how quickly can you spot the problems, and if you're doing it by a physical way or a manual way rather, that's a lot harder to build it. It goes back to the data, you know, how long did it take to get that data in order to know that people are taking those windy streets for it, and then did they make the map simple, like you were saying, the analytics, did they make it simple enough for them to say, hey, this is easy, I can go and do it. So it's that whole step approach to it.
Well, imagine if we took that again, coming back to events, you imagine if you had like a couple of cameras on the top of the stage looking down at the crowd, thousands and thousands of people, and all you've got is security at the front around the edges. You can never see what's going on. But if you had cameras looking down with Protect's AI kind of doing its thing, and it's able to pick out, I don't know whether it is, but like able to pick out a human that's like, you know, unconscious, and it notify, boom, there you go. Now that security guard can immediately react. Wait, instead of waiting for the crowd or the singer or somebody to go, there's a problem there. We can actually have, you know, these computers actively looking for something like that. We can react immediately. Like, not only is it about making better decisions to stop that stuff, but also enable to have like a quicker reaction time to this stuff. Like, for the potential here is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. Like, our primary, you know, customers in ports, logistics, warehousing, you know, those type of things, or distribution. And they kind of use it for that. It's building up the data points and how quickly you can do that. Like I said, that, you know, Marks and Spencer's within just a few weeks were able to hugely increase their compliance just because it was something they had before, and bringing in this system to build up that data in order to make the data informed decisions.
Yeah.
It's all about that. It's the speed of it too.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. So what does the kind of process look like? Let's say I'm a safety professional and I listen to this and I'm like, oh, this sounds really interesting. I might give Protect a call. Like, what's that kind of journey like from ringing you guys to it's up and running? Typically, like, what's it? What do we do? How does it look? What are the kind of critical points throughout that? How long and so on?
Sure. Yeah. So just talk through that. We're super fast on our end for sure. So it's usually like, twofold. Onefold, like I said, we don't have a safety background. I just love talking to like this type of stuff and learning. Even like you said, you know, you're constantly looking around. I'm finding myself doing that. We went to the NEC in Birmingham and I spotted two guys not using the walkway effectively. And it really rustled my feathers at the time, but I feel like I'm just folding, becoming one of my own. You know, clients or customers. Yeah, exactly. slowly but surely now, I'll just wear a high vis for fun when I'm watching TV from now on. On that end, I'd love to just chat to people on what they think. You know, I really, really would. Just like, what do you feel about it? What are your views on AI and whatnot? On the flip side, if it's Protect is of interest and you want to explore with us on that, from kind of sign off when you're happy with it, we it's about a 5-week period. So once it's implemented, what happens then is that the AI essentially learns what's what in a facility, what do people, you know, wear, what is IVIS, what the it's generally forklifts can look different, kind of different from each facility, that kind of stuff. And then within kind of that process, you do the onboarding, like training, you know, as much as it is intuitive, there has to be training and usage, making sure that you're getting the most out of it. Because no point in, you know, we probably have overly evolved with our customers sometimes, just like hand holding the whole time. So we actually had a customer tell us to feck off, they're fine. they could use the system okay, they didn't need our help. We're like, okay, great, that's fine. So we're super needy. But we very much hold our customers' hands through the whole kind of process too.
Yeah. Awesome. So how long did it take like the AI to learn? Does that take a long time before you start whipping data out?
No, like 2-3 weeks, less than a month usually.
So within the matter of like literally signing and getting all the boring financial stuff in the way, which from a startup, that's not the boring bit, but it's, you know, once you're getting that boring stuff out of the way with, it's like literally a matter of a few weeks then really before you can start getting some data coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. And you're predominantly working in, so where's most of the interest coming from at the moment? You said ports, manufacturing, did you say?
Yeah, manufacturing, logistics, distribution, what kind of areas are we in? They're kind of the main ones where it's a pretty static facility, if you think of like rack space and stuff like that, all that type of stuff. But that's where the most dangerous and those unknown unknowns are really funny. Like we had one client who thought people were running to a facility. Turns out they're actually using which I'm sure everybody's done, using the lifts for lifting like trucks. the pallet trucks just as a scooter.
Yeah.
Going around the place. Things that everybody does them, but they just identified that was a problem because they had someone fall off of it like a few weeks beforehand. Yeah. Those type of things. So they're the ones we're definitely most impactful on, and waste management as well, massive one as well. There's been a lot of injuries and fatalities that over the last year or two. So the type of industries we work with.
Okay, that's interesting. Interesting, actually, just a kind of similar, but not. It wasn't AI. It was just a waste company. I did a bit of work for. I was doing a fire risk assessment, and it was really interesting. Actually, they'd spent a lot of money on CCTV because they were a metals manufacturer and a precious metals manufacturer. So this company would take all types of metal, but they'll also take phones and things like that and break all of that down and pull the metal out. So it was a lot of money on site, like a lot of money. So their security was like, I genuinely thought I turned up at the wrong place. I thought I turned up at like HMS Belfast or something like that. Like I was just like, that's the only prison I could think of actually. But like, I thought I turned up at like a prison. I was like, Jesus Christ. No, wait, that's a boat. Is a HMS Belfast a boat?
Anyway,
I'm trying to think. I don't think that's a prison. I think it's a boat.
I've never been. So, touch wood.
I'm going to Google that now. I've just embarrassed myself. That's a boat. I thought I turned up at a prison. I'm not going to try and think of a name of a prison because obviously that would be embarrassing. Anyway, we were talking away and I was talking about, often I talk about security when doing a fire risk assessment from an arson point of view. And we were talking about, and he was like, oh, we spent like millions on our security. And I was like, yeah, I can tell. And he was like, actually, it's been really helpful from a fire point of view. And I was like, okay, right. Like from an arson point of view, he said, no, we were out like on a Saturday, just not working. Site was shut down. And we didn't notice a battery essentially had been kind of in amongst a skips of metal, and it started getting really hot. We've got infrared sensors on our camera, and that picked that up before any smoke, any flames, any nothing. It just picked up that something was getting real hot, and it sent us a notification saying there's something warm in your yard where something warm shouldn't be. We turned up. By the time we got there, it started smoking, and we moved out to the middle of the yard. And by the time they moved out to the middle of the yard, it basically just went and started on fire. Called the fire service. They got rid of it and blah, blah, blah. If they didn't have that camera, the whole yard would have gone before the system or somebody else called the fire service. So yeah, it's amazing the potential of this stuff. And as far as I'm aware, they didn't have AI; they just had their infrared. So if they had AI, you know, you imagine the potential then on the back of that. But yeah, just a little anecdote for.
Yeah, but it goes back to the triangle, you know, of spotting those. How many times even before that was, you know, did it get kind of hot or something like that? And if you had an infrared camera, you probably could pick up those things automatically rather than having to have someone in the right place, right time.
Yeah. So you're kind of working in manufacturing and distribution. Is there like a sector or an industry that you're like, oh my God, I'd love to get Protect AI in there, like that's where we want to be. Is there like an industry you're desperate to get your teeth into?
That sounds different. I'm trying to think. No, not really. One funny one we came across, which is we actually were talking to NASA for a bit.
What?
Swear to God, so weird. They came messaged us as well, and I was like, are these guys talking to the right people? And that was a funny one because they started speaking about mission safety. And we're like, I don't think we can do that. And I went back to our like technical team and I was like, okay, I got a random one for you. I was like, can our system pick up aliens? No, and was it able to pick up that kind of stuff, but it wasn't. That was kind of a random one. It was not something I think we'd do. We've talked to some really cool companies, like to be fair. I mean, we've been very fortunate being able to do sidewalks with some of the biggest companies in the world. I can't name them now because I'm under like NDAs and stuff, but some really, really cool ones. Some of the top ones, like Fortune 50 companies as well, which are cool. But what we've noticed, I guess, is that everybody shares very similar problems.
Yeah.
It's these near misses, it's walkway. I think the more we look into it, you know, how horizontal health and safety is across multiple verticals, it's really interesting, you know, of and that's why I think, like going way back when we started, like why safety for us, I think it's the cool thing is because it's not a competitive thing the companies do. It's not like, hey, my company's safer than your company, and they're like, ha, like all that kind of stuff. Everybody's super willing, even this podcast, you know, super willing to share how they're doing safety, how do you improve stuff. And that's why we kind of got involved in it. And we noticed very early that everybody's super willing to share. And that's what I meant about loving just to chat to people about what we're doing and how maybe they see it being applicable to their workplace.
Yeah. Mate, I've really enjoyed this chat. Thank you very much for that, buddy. If people wanted to get hold of yourself or the team at Protect, I want to talk to you about kind of just chat or to move forward, what's the best way to kind of find out more about you guys and move forward?
Sure, yeah. So our website is www.protex.ai, or just on LinkedIn. My name is Dan Hobbs again. For anyone listening, feel free to drop us a line on that. Like, we're trying to find some really forward thinking people on to chat to. We're doing a kind of interviews with a lot of people at the moment and making a user group. So if anybody's interested in getting involved in like an AI, not just around Protex, just AI in general, and a user group around that, we're very willing to chat and would love to have the opportunity to.
Awesome. Amazing. We shall put your LinkedIn and your website in the description below for everyone. Thank you very much, Dan. I really enjoyed this chat. I was
really... Yeah, me too. We made a good evening of it. So it was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Okay, peeps, hope you enjoyed that conversation. There's lots more to talk about of AI. It's definitely not the end of the conversation for us. I think we need to get a lot more kind of tech people on, AI people on, people that are innovating and helping us do our job. And like we said in the podcast, fill the holes of us just being poor, complicated little humans. Hope you enjoyed that. If you did, don't forget to check out all of Dan's LinkedIn, the website for Protex AI as well. If you need any help with any of this stuff, well, not AI because that's not us, but like if you need any help with like the safety stuff, we can definitely help you out there. Check out riskfluentlimited.com. Otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.